Hello everyone, I am here with Mr. Omar Halabieh of Amazon Payment Services. How are you, Omar?
Doing great, how about yourself?
Great, thanks for joining us today. We're really happy to have you here.
No, I appreciate the opportunity, yeah.
So Omar, tell me about your role at Amazon Payment Services.
Sure, so first just to set some context,
yes.
So Amazon Payment Services is really here to empower merchants to provide their customers with payment experiences that are simple, affordable, and trusted. We power the payment experience of over 3,500 merchants in the region, spanning 8 countries, ranging from verticals and industries such as e-commerce, airlines, healthcare. Merchants of all sizes, from small and medium businesses to large enterprises, and of varying online capabilities, whether they have a full-fledged digital commerce presence to having no online presence. So my role at Amazon Payment Services, essentially I lead the technology function there, which encompasses everything from pre-sales and on the technical side and solutioning to help prospective merchants understand the value they can drive out of our services, all the way to when they onboard, how do we get them integrated into using our services, to then developing new products and services, to maintaining and supporting all the existing products and services that we provide, and making sure that they're reliable, highly available, obviously mm-hmm. secure, and all the data management that comes along with it as well.
Okay, so you're head of technology. How old is Amazon Payment Services?
Sure. So Amazon Payment Services used to be known previously as Payfort under the Souq umbrella.
Yes.
Payfort was founded back in 2013, so we've been in business in this region for over 10 years now.
Okay. And what market are you focused on mainly?
Sure. So we operate across 8 markets in the Middle East and North Africa region. So we have UAE, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Oman, Kuwait, Jordan, Lebanon, as well as Qatar. Yeah.
Okay. And is there a reason why you're focused on this part of the world?
Sure. So historically, Payfort was originally first sort of conceived by the Souq Group as a means to help them grow their e-commerce business by solving payment challenges in the region. Obviously, when they conceived this organization, they thought, hey, how about we also solve payment problems and challenges that other merchants may have, not just themselves. So it was set up as an independent entity to provide payment services. And of course, originally it was supporting the 3 main markets where Souq marketplaces exist in Egypt, UAE, and Saudi. Mm-hmm. But since then, we've been expanding primarily basis the needs of our merchants as they've expanded their presence from local and say 1 or 2 or 3 of these countries into the region. So we've really been following both the merchant demand and the opportunity in the region.
Yeah. Right. And what are some of those challenges that you're referring to?
Sure. So I think, you know, it has a few different flavors. I would say a couple of them are, one is around payment acceptance. So how do you make sure that as merchants are expanding into these various countries, that we accept the majority, if not all of the payment methods that customers in these regions, A, have access to or mm-hmm. choose to use out of whatever payment instruments that they have. So say, for example, a merchant is looking to expand into Kuwait, for example. Most of the folks there use KNET as one of the main payment instruments. It's a local scheme that they have. And so if you're a merchant expanding into Kuwait, you need to be able to accept KNET to make a dent in that market. So that's, in some sense, a challenge that we solve for. Another one is as merchants, you know, work to expand in the region, they want to also simplify both their technical footprint as well as the integrations that they have. And so for us, you know, merchants integrate with us using a single integration and are able to expand their technology footprint without needing to integrate with a whole new payment service provider and build new contracts, et cetera. So we make it easy for them to expand with one integration. And then, of course, you know, customers and merchants alike are looking for a high amount of trust when it comes to payments, so ensuring that we're using the right practices of risk management, fraud detection, but also of information security as data traverses from, you know, the merchants into our environment, it gets processed in our environment and eventually gets stored as well.
Right. So your clients are basically the merchants.
Yeah.
Do you offer training to them when they embark on your with you?
Yeah.
Do you help them through with what they need to set up on their platform?
And sure. So we have a whole series around what we call kind of learning and development and training as well. It starts out with even with prospects. We do regular webinars, both to existing merchants if they choose to attend, but also non-existing sort of merchants of ours, where we educate them on topics ranging from risk management to trends in financing to information security or any other topics, really to share the learnings that, that we have. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as merchants decide to come and onboard with us, we support them with our solution architecture and integration teams on the technical side, but there's also support on the business development and relationship management side to walk them through every step of the process, mm-hmm. make sure we're addressing all their challenges and concerns, and making sure that they're integrating it with our services in the best means possible to get the most value out of their services and their integration with us as well. Mm.
So say a merchant is based in the UAE and wants to sell in Qatar, the currency exchange, is it done at your level? How does that work?
Sure. So essentially, the way our existing business model works is essentially we're expecting the merchant to have an acquiring entity or a local entity in the countries where they're operating from. So in this case, like the merchant would have an entity or a business that they're transacting under in Qatar and would have an acquiring account with a local Qatari bank. And then we essentially facilitate the payment in that respect. Now, if the customer on their side is transacting in a different currency, then we do provide optionality that the merchant can make available to the customer in terms of what currency they want to transact on and how that works. But eventually the money will get settled locally in whatever the local acquiring bank account is.
Okay, so it's up to the merchant to decide to set the currency for its product?
That's correct, and they have the option to expose that to their customer in terms of how that works, yeah.
Okay, and so would you say that you are exceeding customer expectations?
Sure. I think for us, like, we really wake up every day and ask ourselves, like, what are we doing to go above and beyond for our customers? To me, I see the bar that customers set is essentially a target that we want to achieve, but it's a never-ending pursuit, because the moment that you set the bar at a certain level, your customers come back and this becomes their baseline expectation. And so what we try to do is, again, be relentless in our approach of obsession over customers, mm-hmm. and make sure that we spend a lot of time with them at every stage, whether they're existing, they're prospecting, understanding their challenges, the opportunities that are there, and how do we continue to raise the bar on meeting or exceeding their expectation. Mm.
And what makes Amazon Payment Services different than other payment services?
Sure. So I would say a couple of things in terms of how we approach things. I think the first one is I just mentioned about our customer-obsessed culture in terms of really spending a lot of time trying to understand what are the merchant pain points, needs, specifically in the region, and how do we solve for that? So starting with the customer and really working our way backwards in terms of meeting their need, that would be, I think, one. The other one is the local and regional expertise that we bring. As I mentioned, we're one of the oldest payment service providers here in the region. We've been in this region for over 10 years. So we bring an immense amount of knowledge and understanding of the payment landscape here, and use that to enhance our product offering for our customers. Mm-hmm. And then I think the third one is now, in the last few years with the acquisition of Amazon, I think all the toolkit knowledge, whether in terms of process, systems, know-how that comes along with being part of Amazon, mm-hmm. I think bringing all of that with the innovations that come along with it and making it available to our customers, I think is what makes us unique with respect to everyone else. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, being the head of technology, and you just brought up an important point of local and regional expertise, do you generally find it difficult to find talent?
Sure. So I'll start maybe with the global context of tech talent, and then maybe zoom in specifically on the region. So tech talent shortage has been a challenge, I would say, for at least a good 15 years or so. And I was reading a report recently that the IMF is projecting that there's going to be an 85 million people shortfall in tech by the year 2030. And just to put that number into perspective, I think every year in the US, roughly, there's about 400,000 people that enter the tech job industry. So you can see that there's a tremendous disparity between the target amount that we want to get to
right. And yeah. That.
And what that means is, like, if we're not able to hit those numbers, there's a large opportunity cost to the economy in terms of opportunity that would be there if we're able to meet that. So certainly it's a challenge. I would say this challenge in some sense has been getting compounded as of late, especially with advancements even within tech of emerging and new technologies, which makes the need for specializations even that didn't exist maybe even up to 5 years ago that start emerging, things like data scientists or maybe security engineers, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Making it imperative for us to, you know, essentially figure out how to solve for this challenge. I think zooming into the region specifically, I would say maybe prior to the past, I would say maybe about 5 years, I think most of the tech talent that was being, you know, developed in the region was primarily going abroad and, and joining, you know, global organizations. I think it's really very exciting and for me, something that I look at with a lot of excitement in terms of the amount of opportunities that are now available in the region, whether through startups that have started very small and local, but have gone on to find not even regional success, but even global success in some cases. So I think that's helped create more of a local and regional talent pool. There, of course, again, now that a lot of the global companies such as Amazon, but many others as well, have moved into the region, I think the impact they're having in terms of creating, again, local high-quality jobs that are able to take in a lot of the talent that we're generating in the region and help develop them and grow them to the next level is also very exciting. But I also feel that it's incumbent on all organizations, Amazon being one of them, to take a big role in investing in the talent pool to help grow and hopefully close that tech challenge that that I mentioned. A few things that we've been doing in the region, you know, starting with providing internship opportunities for for tech students across SoCals to help develop tech talent and provide hands-on work experience as one.
So you have a Amazon Payment Services Academy?
In some sorts, at the Amazon level across the region. We also have, we're providing, you know, lectures and presentations in many forums, whether universities, coding academies, et cetera, in the region. We're providing scholarship opportunities. Recently, we basically provided scholarships for students in cybersecurity in Jordan to support developing the next wave of security talent in the region. So these are a few snippets. AWS is doing a lot in terms of their restart program and the upskilling of tech talent in the region on cloud services, artificial intelligence, etc. These are just a few snippets. There are a lot more, but I think it's very critical and important for us to drive the economies in the region to basically both upskill the existing talent and also help drive the next wave of talent in the region.
Yeah. Definitely this region is becoming, is attracting a lot of companies, and it's becoming a tech hub, a fintech hub, essentially. But I do agree, we also need to, you know, train within and provide opportunities to university students through your internships. That's a very good idea. Just to touch on this internship, how many do you take on?
Sure. So I think, like, I would say that in general, like, if I look at, for example, this year, I think we've taken probably over over a hundred folks.
Yeah,
that across
is incredible.
The MENA region. So it's
a lot.
Oh, I never
thought
it
would be three digits.
No.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
And I think that's probably a conservative estimate. The number is probably higher than that even. Yeah.
E-commerce is definitely the future. Do you feel that with the evolution of e-commerce, do you feel that the older generation, say the baby boomers, have embarked on e-commerce probably because they were forced to during the pandemic, whereas, you know, normally they'd go into a shop to buy their products, they had to go online to buy their products. Do you feel that there's more of a buy-in from the baby boomer, say?
Sure. So, interesting question. I think, you know, while we each may have sort of, in some sense, perceived biases about the demographics of online shoppers, I was actually trying to test even what my own biases were. And I went online and was doing my own research, and I looked at a recent study that was done in the U.S. And basically, in the age group of 18 to 34, obviously we see the highest adoption of, in terms of percentage of overall e-commerce shoppers. I think the number was around 20% for that age group. Mm-hmm. But surprisingly, when you looked at all the other age groups above that one, so whether it's the 30s to 40s, the 40s to 50s, they ranged in terms of about 14 to 17% each in terms of their share. Now, of course, you have to account for how many, you know, how much of the population falls in which category. But right. I think the main point here is that while there is some difference, of course, the digital natives, if you will, are more prone to adopt e-commerce. Mm-hmm. I think the older generations are also adopting e-commerce with quite a bit in terms of percentage, and the difference mm-hmm. between them is not as significant as we might imagine it to be.
Well, I'm thinking of my yeah, father, that is sure. a baby boomer, yeah. so that's 65 plus, yeah. that's actually 70 plus.
Yeah. So, but I think we're definitely seeing adoption across, like, I think all the rest of the age groups, over 14%. And what we do see, of course, that, you know, through the pandemic wave, while, you know, e-commerce adoption was obviously there even from before in terms of as people experienced it, but I would say at least estimates people give is like the pandemic accelerated the growth and adoption of digital commerce by mm-hmm. anywhere 3 to 5 years along the adoption curve. And what we're seeing is people who've experienced it maybe even for the first time during the pandemic really saw the value in terms of the convenience and a lot of the other features that they observe, and have really stuck to it afterwards, mm-hmm. maybe at a different frequency, perhaps as they have more physical options open up again, but certainly as now using it as one of the channels through which they shop, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Omar, you're head of technology yeah. at Amazon Payment Services. Your industry is booming right now, e-commerce, fintech. How important do you feel is collaboration in this space?
Sure. No, definitely. I think collaboration, in a way, is a must. That's not really even an option. In the fintech and payments industry in general, there's a lot of, in some sense, players in the ecosystem, and each player, you know, adds value in certain aspects. And it's not, I would say, imaginable to say or fathom that, hey, one entity can solve all of the opportunities or the challenges that exist. And making collaboration essentially almost mandatory in that respect to bring the most value for customers. And mm-hmm. so one of the things I wanted to highlight is that's why, for example, we've invested in partnering with DIFC and opening a fintech lab to really act as our hub or focal through which we engage with the community here from the UAE and beyond in terms of the ecosystem, whether it starts with government, regulatory bodies, central mm-hmm. banks, but also in terms of the ecosystem and the industry, whether banks, you know, traditional finance, fintechs, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Up-and-coming startups. And I think the advances in fintech really create, in some sense, a level playing field. So it's not no longer reserved for sort of banks or traditional mm-hmm. financial players. Even small startups are coming in and disrupting. And so I think there's tons of opportunities there, but collaboration mm-hmm. is certainly the way to go in terms of, you know, extracting as much value as we can for customers and bringing the best financial services out there.
Mm-hmm. And what is your ideal image of collaboration?
Sure, so I would say for me, the ideal vision of collaboration is one that's sort of angled at providing, solutions for customer, you know, challenges and problems. So when I think about fintech or financial services in general, I would say the top things that come to mind are first and foremost inclusion. Mm-hmm. How do we make sure that we're able to bring in people to the financial services sector? I think it's easy for us, especially here in the UAE, where we almost take financial services as a given. Pretty much everyone here has a bank account by default when you come into the country. But I think when you think about the globe, there are over 2 billion people actually that don't have access to financial services
or credit
credit. I mean, even right. financial services to start with in any form. And then out of those, then you start getting into, well, okay, now that we have some kind of inclusion, what about access? What about affordability? What about you know, cost of these services? What about the user experience along these services? So mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of opportunity to collaborate to solve all of these challenges. And it really starts with trying to bring in as many people as we can into the system. And so those are some of the challenges that I see us collaborating with the broader groups on, yeah.
Okay, so collaboration with competitors as well, like roundtable.
We're always, we say we're at Amazon, we're obsessed with customers, but inspired by competition.
Yes.
And whatever is in the support of working with our, working in the favor of our customers, yeah.
Hmm. Looking at alternative technologies, what is your view of the blockchain technology, and do you foresee Amazon Payment Services eventually embarking on this technology?
Sure.
In some form or another?
Sure. So, well, obviously I can't disclose any specific plans of what Amazon or Amazon Payment Services does, but I just wanted to share our mental model. Like, we're very excited about the technologies that are emerging and the promises that they hold to bring bearing and opportunity for customers. I think the way I look at it is we're very much engaged in that conversation, both in terms of learning ourselves about these technologies, but also collaborating with others in terms of how we can bring these technologies to life mm-hmm. To solve customer problems and needs. Just to give you some examples, like just last week, I just came back from the Point Zero Forum in Zurich, mm-hmm. where in joint collaboration between the finance ministries of Switzerland as well as Singapore, mm-hmm. There was a conference set up in terms of you know, the topics of Web 3.0, DeFi, digital currencies, you know, CDBC, including cryptocurrencies as well. And then this week we're co-sponsoring the DIFC FinTech Week as well. Which will be covering a lot of similar topics as well. So we remain very engaged. We're very excited, and as a technologist at heart, very mm-hmm. excited about the opportunities this presents, and eagerly seeing again how do we use these technologies to advance customer opportunities. I think it's
yes.
something I'm looking forward to. Yeah,
it's wild thoughts
yeah.
of the future. Blockchain leads me to ask you about cybersecurity.
Sure.
What are your views
sure.
on cybersecurity? Do you feel that e-commerce is, you know, threatening that space, or
sure.
do you feel like it's pretty much under control?
So I would say the way I look at cybersecurity, I don't necessarily like to use the word threat because it infers like existentiality. I think for me it's more of a challenge in
right.
terms of, as we're dealing with e-commerce, digital payments, we have to make sure that we're able to do these things in a safe and secure manner. Obviously, the statistics in that area are, to be honest, quite alarming. Like, I think I was reading a report recently that, you know, between last year and this year, there's an increase of over 20% in terms of cybersecurity, you know, major cybersecurity incidents, which in some sense is a wake-up call for us to say that we need to continue to do more. And when you look at the top factors of customers, you know, either using a digital payment solution or transacting on e-commerce, trust comes up as sort of the number one factors of what drives consumer choice and consumer decision to partake
okay.
In these activities. So it's very important to, in some sense, prioritize this as the number one priority, as we do at Amazon Payment Services. We
yeah.
say customer trust kind of trumps all else. I think the way I look at cybersecurity is it's kind of a multifolded problems, and I'll try to maybe break it down a little bit in terms of how I think about it versus, in some sense, the physical security, which we're more used to thinking about, but mm-hmm. obviously at a much larger scale because it's in the virtual world. So I think the first one is about developing, obviously, all your preventative measures. These are, if you think about it, the gates, the locks that you have.
Right.
Just to make sure that your environment is secure as you deploy services and infrastructure. But then it also comes into isolation in terms of if somebody did manage to get in through some part of your either services or infrastructure, how do you make sure you're able to contain that breach and for it not to go sprawl mm-hmm. Everywhere else? Then it goes into beyond just a preventative measure, but it's also about ongoing monitoring detection. And you need to have good baselines. And what I mean by that is you need to have a good baseline of understanding what's the normal activities that usually happen. Like, the service is accessed, you know, once a day, every day at 8 a.m. suddenly you're seeing the service being accessed at 10 p.m. It may be okay, like there may be a legitimate mm-hmm. reason why, but this right. could be a reason for you to suspect
okay.
something may be going on.
So do you have strict regulations with your merchants? Do you, for example, review their T's and C's or, you know, have well-defined
sure. So in general, all companies that process payments or credit card mm. Payments in general need to follow by the PCI DSS standards. This is a global standards, and there are third parties that come and audit us and any other of our merchants and partners that handle credit card payments. But beyond that, we also do very strict assessments whenever we onboard third parties with which mm-hmm. with whom we deal with as well. And then we also share a lot of best practices in terms of security with our merchants and everyone in the ecosystem, because we also have to recognize that information security is not only about systems, it's also about people. How do we train employees to also be super vigilant about mm-hmm. Cybersecurity? Because a lot of the incidents don't start in the systems, they start with people. Things like social engineering, phishing attacks, etc., are all things that we need to pay attention to. Yeah.
Okay, okay. You brought up the issue of trust twice now. When you're talking about trust, are you talking about customers trusting the merchants?
I would say it goes in all directions, because okay. it's the customer trusting the merchant and their ability to safeguard their data, their information. But then in turn, it's the merchant trusting us as a payment service provider that we're doing this. But as we say in security, it's like it's an ecosystem. So there, you need to be able to uphold a high level of trust across the ecosystem
yes.
for consumers to obviously feel safe and secure to provide those transactions. And when it comes to security, mm-hmm. In some sense, it's a global responsibility because we're all in some sense in this together. And that's mm-hmm. where you see us also actively participating in industry groups around
right.
Cybersecurity, because collectively, we can all keep the environment safer,
mm-hmm.
But no single entity can do that in isolation.
Fantastic. And let me ask you this
sure.
question. Where do you see Amazon Payment Services in 2030, say in 10 years from now?
Sure. So I think the way I look at it is it'd be foolish of me to sit here and kind of predict fully forward what will be the case, but I wanted to provide maybe some trends, or at least whether they're emerging or fully emerged, that I think will shape, and I'll do it in the broader sense of e-commerce, because digital payments, I would say, in some sense, also supports e-commerce. So I think a couple of trends that I see is, I think one is the whole notion of supply chain resiliency is something that we learned coming out of COVID, and that historically, like supply chains used to rely on globalization, lowest cost supply, running as thin on inventory levels as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these fundamental assumptions through the COVID pandemic were questioned. And I think a lot of companies are revisiting their supply chain strategy.
So how do you feel they have changed?
Based on that. I think looking at strategies of different levels of sourcing from different locales,
mm-hmm.
how much inventory you carry, what shipment methods you use, the routes, mm-hmm. like everything, the whole way that you manage supply chain is changing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. I think the other one is advances in the metaverse, augmented reality, virtual reality, I think are really blurring the lines between physical and online shopping experience, which I think will continue to pave a role. I think the advances in AI, machine learning, and also big data,
mm-hmm.
I think will further drive personalization of shopping experience forward. We talked about blockchain, not only in payments, but also in terms of how it helps facilitate supply chain, international trade,
mm-hmm.
I think will play a role there. Other two or three trends I want to mention also were, I think the increased role of corporate responsibility and sustainability. I think the bar of what customers are expecting in terms of how companies behave and act and
yes.
how they do things versus just delivering a service, I think will continue to rise in importance moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Absolutely.
I think to me, the global projects that are happening to bring underserved or unserved areas into the digital ecosystem, I think are going to be super exciting. Like we have over, I think 3 billion people on this world don't even yet have internet access or regular internet access. Imagine when we're able to bring these people online, how the world will be. So I think those are maybe in my mind some of the trends that are going to impact, you know, e-commerce, digital commerce, and maybe payments, digital payments as we move forward.
Yes, yes. And you brought up the metaverse. Do you have merchants currently that are poking and asking you if you're going to be able to provide them your services?
I think metaverse is kind of similar in the similar vein as I mentioned in terms of the, you know, the digital payment, you know, emerging digital payments, whether in DeFi or digital currencies. I think there's a lot of work happening in terms of understanding what it is, how it works, what opportunities exist, and the different players in the market are in different stages of understanding, maybe prototyping, testing out some things.
Well, but if it's a shop, you can set it up. You can set up your shop on the metaverse, correct?
Sure. And then, well, and then there's the discussions about what is the metaverse and who's managing the metaverse and what flavors of it exist, I think are all sort of emerging topics.
I don't know. I just heard from a friend that she had a big headache afterwards. Anyways, Omar, very nice having you here on the FinTech Surge podcast. I do hope to see you at the FinTech Surge event in October alongside Jitex.
Sure, I really appreciate the opportunity. It's great to spend the time and look forward to Jitex for sure.
Fantastic.
Thank you
very
much
for being here today.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.